We've got in the room, as I say, the Island Media. We have a number of members of the Isle of Wight Conservative Council Group who are supporting Andrew. We have others in the room. We couldn't get everybody on the top table. We have branch chairman. We have the Patrons Club. You're free to talk to them afterwards to find out from the grassroots of the Conservative Party why they're supporting Andrew 100%, as I am indeed this morning. I'm supporting Andrew 100% because he's a man of integrity, commitment and determination. He's popular with the overwhelming majority of Islands, regardless of their political views, because he works hard for the community without party favour. He's an effective constituency MP, and I should do no more now than ask him to join us and speak to us straight away. Andrew Turner, the Member of Parliament for the Isle of Wight and the official Conservative candidate for the coming general election, selected by the Executive Committee of the Isle of Wight Conservative Association on a 2-1 majority. Andrew.
Thank you all very much this morning. I've stood for election here 4 times and won the last 3. But this is unlike any previous campaign, because this time we know precisely when the election will be, 114 days' time. So I wanted to have a formal launch for my campaign to set out my priorities and my views for the forthcoming parliamentary term. But let's make it clear. I remain the Member of Parliament for the island until the end of March, and I very much hope that islanders will put their trust in me for another 5 years. First, however, I wish to make something clear, which is not to say I haven't done so in the past. That is to reiterate that more than 8 years ago, I had a stroke. As a result of that, I have a disability called aphasia. Most of you will recognise the tip of the tongue feeling when you want a word but you can't quite find it. Well, aphasia is like that, only more frequently, in spades. That is why I have to prepare for speeches. But as my record on the island and in Parliament shows, it has not affected my ability to do the job. Now, the reason I've brought you here today is to set out what I see as the priorities for the future. There are national issues and local issues. First, the Conservative-led government has turned this country's economic fortunes around. There have been tough decisions, but the number of people in work, providing for their families, has increased by 1.7 million. We have cut the nation's deficit by a third, and in the typical taxpayer pays £705 less than in 2010, and an extra 3 million people pay no tax at all. But my belief is that this country can only continue to prosper if our relationship with Europe is resolved. In 1975, I voted no to joining the common market. I have seen nothing in the intervening 40 years to convince me that I was wrong then or subsequently. Only the Conservatives can and will deliver an in-out referendum on our membership of the EU. So, secondly, I will work with the Conservative Party and many others besides who want the British people to have a vote. Now, at the moment, the number of migrants coming to this country from outside the EU is over 150,000 people per year. There are things we can put in place to control this, and the Conservatives have reduced it to far below what it was under Labour. But we must do more. I believe that we need to take back our control of our borders, and that includes controlling migration from outside the EU and from inside the EU. So third, these decisions must be ours and made in Britain, not by Europe. And fourthly, another key issue that people are concerned about is our National Health Service. People are living longer, they expect more from our health service, and there are many new pioneering treatments available. And none of us know when we will need the NHS. 8 years ago, I was totally dependent on it, and it didn't let me down. So I know how important the NHS is to all of us, and I will never vote for cuts to it. And I believe the best people to be running the St Mary's are local health professionals, not bureaucrats, not politicians. So those, for me, are the most important national issues, which are, of course, also local concerns. But there are also some truly local issues which make a real difference to islanders' lives. In October last year, I think we made a real breakthrough. After many months behind-the-scenes negotiation about moving Island Line into local control, we were finally able to go public with those plans. I will continue working on that proposal, and it's very much on the cards that this will include bringing steam trains back into ride, which would give a great boost to our historic tourism. But these are not simple decisions. There's a lot to consider. So we intend to set up an expert transport force to look at all the issues of these plans. Sixth, the other burning transport question on the island is about the ferry services. And I have secured the government's agreement to widen the task force to include all the island's transport services. I'm glad to say that all three ferry companies have welcomed this. The Isle of Wight Council unanimously supported it. I look forward to working with them and other groups to help improve islanders' lives and support our local community. And with the leader of the council, I will be meeting Transport Minister, the Right Honourable John Hayes, on the 26th of January, and Claire Perry, the Rail Minister, on the 11th of February. Seventh, the island is home to many entrepreneurs. We have a multitude of small businesses engaged in pretty much every activity under the sun. And as you can see, we have lots of sun. The government has helped small businesses, for example, by reducing the cost of new employees and slashing small business rates. Working with business, the government's initiative on apprenticeships reached its goal recently, when the 2 millionth apprenticeship being taken up, and the next goal is 3 million by 2020. In terms of making necessary savings on our burgeoning welfare budget, the Conservatives have agreed to cut the cap from 26,000 to 23,000. People need to be helped into work, not paid to stay out of it. When re-elected, my priorities will include working to increase the standard of living for islanders already in work. The welfare system must return to being a safety net, not a lifestyle choice. The Labour government left our economy in a terrible mess. Islanders, like people elsewhere, have endured hardship as a result of that incompetence. Only we can be trusted with Britain's economy. Only we can manage our NHS, and only we can deliver a referendum on Britain's EU membership. I love the island, and islanders are a very independent-minded bunch. I have been their MP for 14 years, and being the island's MP is a great privilege. I have the experience needed to do the job, a loyal and great supporting team working with me, and perhaps most vitally, I have the energy to carry on fighting for the things I believe in, for the island, and for local people. Thank you very much.
Speaking today, Conservative group leader, Councillor Dave Stewart, says, and this is a quote, "In Andrew Turner, we have an MP who has sought to represent the views and concerns of all islanders over many years. Whether on his regular Saturday morning doorstep meetings, which he had kept up across the island, or by his work at Westminster on a range of issues, from housing, budget and economy, or the ongoing challenge to improve our ferries. He's been out in my area, helping local people in need, and has supported several initiatives we as a group have sought to promote, such as the Island Business Forum and growth in apprenticeships for our young people. Despite all the recent internal challenges and personal issues he's had to endure, Andrew continues to maintain his focus on what really matters, supporting and representing the best interests of all islanders locally and at Westminster. So he has my full support for his coming campaign, and I welcome the stability and continuity his re-election will bring at a time of uncertainty. I look forward to working with Andrew in the coming months and after the election as we look to do what is best for our island, and I hope the wider community will show their continued support for him at the election in May."
Thank you. Now, Ian, obviously we've just had the press conference. Andrew's outlined his priorities for the Isle of Wight, for the campaign, and also answered lots of questions which I guess were expected. Wholeheartedly, you've put your backing behind Andrew's campaign.
Without doubt. I think Andrew is our best chance of winning. I mean, Andrew is so well known on the island, and he's widely respected by thousands and thousands of islanders, whether they're Conservatives or not. I know people who vote for Andrew rather than the fact that he's a Conservative. And if Andrew doesn't stand, we lose all of those votes. It's as simple as that. And we will lose a percentage of the Conservatives as well, who are angry about what is going on here. You know, and so to change Andrew in midstream, after he had been selected, you know, let's make no bones about that. Andrew was selected by the Executive Council to be our candidate. We have a handful of people, and it is less than half a dozen, who have a vendetta against him, and they are just stirring it. It's as simple as that. This whole business of expenses is a red herring. You know, as you know, we all know, all the MPs came under criticism for how the system used to be, not how it is now. And if you speak to people about MPs' expenses, of course they get upset. But they're referring back to that period, and that's what these people are bringing up. And I think to myself, these few people have picked on Andrew, okay? Where are the 649 other constituency people who are outraged by their MPs' expenses? No, this is one out of 650 MPs. It is a complete red herring designed to undermine Andrew Turner.
And one that's very untimely, because obviously at this time he needs as much support and backing as he can get. One that he's also looking at from the Isle of Public. And yet we find ourselves with the Association and the Isle of Wight, a minority of group members, appearing to try to disrupt that.
Yes, we do. And it is a minority. But if you keep banging on and banging on and banging on about a subject, people then begin to think, well, perhaps there's some truth in this. And that's what we're suffering from. Andrew has tried to distance himself from the attacks. And maybe that wasn't the right strategy. Maybe he should have fought back right from the very beginning and said, you know, this is all rubbish. And I'm sure people would have believed him. But he tried to rise above it, really, and maybe that was a mistake.
And just lastly, we heard that there's going to be, in fact, two motions put forward at the meeting. Yeah. The one that's dominated the news is the one that's asking him for him to stand down.
Yeah.
You're absolutely confident that won't be the case?
I'm very confident that Andrew will be our MP. Put it that way.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks, Ian. Cheers
right.
for that.
Good.
Lovely.
Cheers, Matt.
Well done. Thank you.
Without any doubt, I wonder what anybody else tells you, Andrew holds the tremendous respect of thousands of islanders, whether they normally vote Conservative or not.
They vote for Andrew because he is who he is. And who is he? To me, he is a man of integrity and honour, and I value that above all else. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ian. Name and outlet.
Jessica Parker from BBC Radio. Just to go back to some of the issues that have been in the media recently. Mm-hmm. The motion going to the Executive Council later this month, are you confident that you'll get the backing that I'm sure you want at that meeting?
Jessica's asking about a motion going to the Executive Council on the 23rd of January. Selective leaking, as ever. There are two motions going to Executive Council on the 23rd. There is the one that has been leaked maliciously. There is another one that's been tried to be buried and airbrushed out of the public domain. The other one has been submitted by the Conservative group leader, Councillor Dave Stewart, which absolutely endorses Andrew as the candidate for the island and tells the association to get behind him. But Andrew, which of those do you think you're going to win?
I think I'm going to win both of them, because one of them will be lost and one of them will be won. And I'll be in favour of David Stewart's comments.
Hope that's a clear answer.
Matt White, Isle of Wight Radio. Ian Ward alluded to this campaign as one of the most important, certainly in recent times. Mm. How disappointing is it that there is a group within the association that have put forward this motion?
Well, it's very, very concerning, there's no doubt about that, but I'm convinced that we will beat them.
Can I ask you why?
Why?
Yes.
Because they don't represent the majority of members of the Conservative Association, let alone the public.
You can see the Conservative Association is here. I don't expect you would want me to do a seminar on the internal rules and structures of the Conservative Party. It would be interminably boring and I'd slip my own wrists before I got halfway through it. But in essence, the controlling body within the Conservative Party is the Executive Council, which is made up of not just two or three officers whose names you hear all the time. Those officers are supposed to be agents of and accountable to the Council, which is the sovereign body of the Conservative Association. That body, last spring, nominated Andrew as its Conservative candidate on a 2-1 majority. Of course, some people have come off and others have gone on, but we have no reason whatsoever to believe there is a fundamental change. And ultimately, before anybody was to get even close to unseating Andrew, and I don't think this will be an issue at all after the 23rd of January, it would go to a ballot of all 400 members of the Conservative Association on the island, and they would vote massively in favour of retaining Andrew as their candidate, because they know that if he's ditched at this late stage, then we're throwing this constituency in UKIP's direction as quick as Nigel Farage could down a pint of Best Bitter. I can do that in 8 seconds, and I'm told he can beat me.
I'd just like to say, I'm a branch chairman. I have only received telephone calls, and I've received a number, saying, what on earth do these people think they're doing? Andrew's an extremely good MP, and I'm very upset that this is going on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I can say that's the same with my inbox as the Conservative Group Secretary on the Council. I'm the first point of contact for members of the public trying to get in touch with prominent Conservatives. I've had not one single email or call expressing other than support for Andrew, and I've had so many in favour, I've had to generate a standard email to send to them all, or I'd spend all my life answering supportive emails. Andrew, is there anything else you want to add on this sorry affair that, frankly, is going to be behind us within a few days?
Well, I hope it's behind us before we even reach the next meeting, because we can move ourselves in the right direction and go on trying to win the election, and that's what matters.
Matt, you want a second bite of your cherry?
How damaging do you think this has been to the campaign, the recent press coverage and everything that we've read recently?
Well, you know what they say, like fish and chips.
Papers.
They're not really relevant the day after tomorrow.
Fish and chip wrappers. I think that it is interesting to see where the support for Andrew is coming from. Not only has he got solid support within the Conservative Association, as you can see this afternoon, or is it morning. Still morning? I'm losing track of time. It's been a long day already. But out there on the doorsteps, when we go out knocking, when councillors around this table, like Wayne was out in Ryde with Andrew last weekend. Wayne, speak for yourself. You're the deputy group leader and Ryde councillor. What's your experience on the doorsteps?
We went out on Saturday and Andrew received good support. And I can say I've been elected for the last 6 years, three of them as an independent, three of them as a Conservative, and Andrew has supported me and my residents every time I've asked him. And I'm going to support Andrew because he has been selected and he is our candidate, and we should all be supported by our association and we should support each other.
Thank you. From the doorsteps, the feedback is positive. And Simon's also having a second bite, which is fine.
There's been a lot of people, obviously the expenses is something that's come up again recently, and there's been a lot of questions that have been posed that haven't been answered. Is that something that you would commit to do, to answer those questions? Because it seems like the idea of putting light on a subject eradicates any doubt.
Simon is asking about the expenses issue. I know Andrew is going to give a full and frank response to that. And I'm not going to interrupt him once he starts, but I promised a young man I would do a favour, because we couldn't squeeze anybody else in. Will Matthews, the Island MP, said, well, in that case, can I, the youth MP, I think most of the local press know what I mean, could I put a question on his behalf, which is so similar to Simon's that I think now's the time to do it, and it's as follows. With constant alienation between young people and politics, do you think the recent rows of your expenses system has made better or damaged their views on politicians? And what will you do to break this perception among young people?
Well, I think I'd start by saying young people are just as capable as anyone else to recognise a smear campaign when it's happening. This attack on me by three disaffected Conservative members was found to be totally without merit by Catherine Hudson, the Independent Parliamentary Standards Commission. When she rejected the complaint, she suggested that the complainants, who were subsequently named in the Daily Telegraph, were misusing her office in order to pursue local party difficulties. In contrast, she has investigated other MPs and they will be circulated. What is particularly unpleasant about this complaint is the way in which it is dressed up as a moral outrage when the facts show that I have no case to answer. At the time, Sir Thomas Legge conducted a lengthy forensic analysis of the additional costs allowance, explaining how it worked, the role of the fees office in interpreting the rules, and pointing out the flaws in the system. A moral assessment was at the heart of the Legge report. A significant part of my opponent's complaint was that I had in some way breached a moral code that they had invented. But the fact was Sir Thomas Legge got there first, making a much more thorough investigation of the parliamentary rules and procedures relating to MPs' behaviour. He produced a well-argued case for what a reasonable person would accept to be within the bounds of propriety. He defined the moral landscape against which all MPs' expenses were judged. Many MPs had their expenses questioned and repayments were requested. The expenses I claimed were fully cleared, not once, but twice. At the time, I made a full, unredacted figures available for any constituent or the press to see. That was the time to raise queries, not 5 years later. Also in passing, I should say that I have seen evidence that a particular member of the association told another member last July that he was going to drop a bombshell about Andrew Turner's expenses, that's the quotation, hardly the action of a loyal Conservative. This subject is one which can cause endless confusion and uncertainty, particularly 5 years after the final figures were presented. I'm not trying to hide anything, as Catherine Hudson made clear, it would be unfair to try to revisit all the complex matters so thoroughly investigated so long ago. The fact is, I have done nothing which the system did not accept or which was found to be morally wrong. Thank you very much.
A very thorough answer. I'll just emphasise what Andrew said there. And I've spotted you, Charlotte. Just give me a second. There are
with
copies...
respect, you didn't answer my question.
I'm talking. With respect, for the press who are here, there are copies of the letter from the Parliamentary Standards Commissioner which dismisses the allegations as a misuse of her office and the systems of Parliament, and again, they are available from Denise at the end. Charlotte, you've been very patient trying to get... Simon, I'll come back to you. I'll come back to you, Simon.
Why not answer the question that I asked now? Because
okay.
All you did was prepare a statement.
Right.
There.
Simon.
Ladies
and gentlemen, order. Simon, you've been offered an exclusive interview with Andrew next week. I offered you that a week ago, and you haven't yet come back on the date.
This is a press conference.
Charlotte.
I'd like to return to the expenses.
Fine, absolutely fine.
My understanding is that the lead inquiry covered expenses, not the designation of the second term. And I think what a lot of people like to know is why, for 6 years, you nominated Seal House as your second home while declaring that your main home, you lived on the island. And for 6 years, you claimed £103,000 in taxpayers' money, including things on shining your bath and bedheads and all this kind of thing. How is it that you live on the island, and you say that's your home, and then for 6 years... you say it's your second home. Before that, it was apparently your main home. After that, it's your second home. How does that add up?
A very good question, Charlotte. Just clarify how you interpret the rules on second homes.
The question is, which is my real home, if you like? I'm trying to avoid both those definitions. If you were overseas, but you came back 2 or 3 times a year... and lived in your home, you would regard your home in Britain as your natural home. Your natural home. That would have been my home, the place where I lived, albeit not as frequently, but the place where my heart lay. That's the difference. That's the difference. And I chose to register it, regard it as my home. But the problem was, I was required to say which place you stayed at most, and that was why we chose London.
The Parliamentary Commissioner...
Didn't that apply before?
I'm sorry?
Why didn't that apply before 2004?
Because at that time I had... Sorry, what are you suggesting?
It was your main home.
Yes.
Then it was your second home. Now it's your main home.
Changed. The guidance was changed. The guidance from the parliamentary authorities regarded it, and they choose how you would regard it. I followed their advice, and that was their advice.
And are you saying you spent more time in London?
No. I was spending that time at the time, yes.
More time in London, taking into account recesses, coming down at weekends, because you're very good as
a
constituency MP.
But unfortunately, there are more days in the week.
Your time off for ill health. You're saying you
no.
I'm
not having regard to that, and that's because a decision was made by Parliament on my behalf. If you know what I mean. That's when I was not. I was claiming, of course, because I signed the chit, but I was not capable of making decisions at that time.
Okay, I think we're going to move on.
Do you think taxpayers should be expected to pay for bedheads and baths and over £1,000 worth of having a bath done?
I don't claim that now.
You did claim it
then? I'm not claiming it now.
At the time, it was perfectly common practice, it was perfectly legal, it was perfectly moral, but Andrew doesn't claim now.
It may have been legal, but do you think it was in the spirit?
Well,
of a good use of taxpayers' money?
I don't think that's the point. The point is that at the time I followed
the rules. Taxpayer would think it was the point.
at the time, I followed the rules. Now, just one other issue. The place, if I hadn't been claiming here, I'd be claiming it for London. The price is about the same, actually, believe it or not. My flat, a small flat in London, is about the same as a C Street place.
So I'm asking
place.
You to think gardening and bars and beds.
I'm sorry. There's no relevance at all to gardening. I've never paid for other people to pay for gardening.
I think we should move on now. Charlotte, the County Press have got an exclusive interview with Andrew at the end of this this morning. They can ask as many detailed questions as they like then. Has anybody from the club?
May I ask perhaps that direction, that question should be directed to Sir Thomas Legg, because in fact in his report he actually spells out what exactly how much of what an MP can spend his money on. It includes gardening, and he actually sets out the amount which is considered reasonable to spend.
It is absolutely true. It was a very, very comprehensive report. Do we have any other pressing political questions? Simon, last one, and then I'm going to wind up.
Well, I asked if Andrew would give a commitment to provide detailed answers about the expenses, and then you led it off into talking about a pre-prepared question. Would you commit to answer questions that Islanders still want answered about your election, about your expenses?
I think we've provided all the evidence we need to. And, and especially, let me point out this point. This evidence was gone through in great detail, in public, and on behalf of the parliamentary authorities 5 years ago. I'm not having that election again.
Right.
Questions still remain with the Islanders, though.
Simon, you've asked the question, you've had your answer. I've got a hand up in the back there.
Yes, I'm Graham Shorter. I see you. Conservatives. I'm one of the foot soldiers that goes out with Andrew on a Saturday morning. The question of expenses very, very rarely comes up. People aren't interested in it. It's only the opposition and the press that have an interest. The rest of them couldn't care less.
Thank you for that contribution. The last word must go to the Grand Dame, head of the Island Media Corps, Charlotte, and then I really am winding up.
Andrew, you're among a lot of supporters here, and well done for that. But in the last weeks and months, there have been questions over your health and your stamina to do the job. There have certainly been questions over your expenses, questions which I believe have not been fully answered. There have been coverage in the national newspaper branding you a laughing stock.
It's turning into a speech, Charlotte. What's the question?
Right. And now you are facing a vote of no confidence from the executive. Do you think all this in any way affects your credibility as a Conservative candidate? And is it fair upon the island to bring this kind of publicity?
Well, the latter...
Also, could I just add that the coverage has also conflated your professional and private lives in the most unfortunate manner?
Unfortunate.
Well, it's unfortunate that's a fact, and I can't do anything about that. But I think it's worth asking yourself, who put this stuff before the public and before the press? And the fact is, the people, a very small number, but a number of people can very easily get their quotes in. And quite a lot of those were not so quick, perhaps, at putting them in the press. But they've got the press, and now we're trying to go back on that. I've already explained that following aphasia, it makes it very difficult to find the right words or even write speeches as fluently as I used to. But the problem is, my general health and my energy are fine, as anyone who's seen me out canvassing every Saturday. My message to anyone suffering a sudden trauma, and I think this is relevant. Do you know 10 million people have a stroke or some other disability? A very, very large number. And a sudden stroke, like a trauma, means you've got to summon up the energy and show that you can overcome it, sometimes with help from unexpected sources. So 8 years ago, I could have died although I'm left with a disability, I'm still active and effective, and I've looked after the interests of Islanders for the last 14 years, and I intend to do the same for the next five.
Thank you for that. Can I just say, in
support of Andrew, since I've known Andrew, I've come to know him as a true gentleman. He's very concerned about people, he's very concerned about the island population, and he's been instrumental in helping me in my quest, in my ambition to see reform of health and well-being, not only on the island, but nationally. He really understands people, and the poor chap might not be able to find the words when he wants to, but I know damn well that if I ever need it, I've got his support, and so has the rest of the Isle of Wight, irrespective of party political allegiances.
Thank you, John. We really are going to finish, but the chairman of the council's caught my eye, and if I don't bring him in, I'll never get to speak in the council chamber again. So, Ian, final word,
Chris,
finally.
Chris, thank you. I'm greatly troubled by the attacks that Andrew gets because of his admitted disability. He doesn't hide that. He tells people that he has this problem. Okay. One of my branch members said on Saturday, if Andrew had a physical disability that you could see, and maybe if he came in here in a wheelchair, would people dare attack him and say he's not up to the job? They wouldn't, would they? They would not dare do that. But because they can't see his disability, he's fair game for everybody who wants to have a snipe at him.
On that particular point, I have been revolted by some of the things that I have seen in writing, ostensibly from members of the Conservative Association, and which some of you media have run. It is certainly contrary to the spirit, and perilously close to breaching the letter of the Disability Discrimination Act. That is a very serious allegation to make, and I do not make it lightly. Unless you've got absolutely solid evidence to suggest that Andrew isn't up to the job, when just having been voted in onto the 22 executive committee by his own parliamentary colleagues who know him better than anyone else, and having been given the Parliamentarian of the Year award, then carry on printing that rubbish by all means. But let's please have a clean campaign and give the man his due. He's a great MP for the island. This conference is now over. We've got an exclusive interview promised to the county press. We're then doing some work with the BBC. We've promised an exclusive interview with On the Wight next week if they want it. If I suggest to Simon and Sally, they get back to me on that so we can put a date in the diary. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all very much for coming.
Friday report still okay for Andrew?
Yeah, he's doing Friday report. Yeah.